Welcome to the Life Insurance Financial Education Podcast. We're pulling back the curtain on high cash value life insurance and how it can help you build wealth and achieve your financial goals. My name is James Barber. I'm your Oregon Cash Flow Pro.
This is Jane from Tax Exam Millionaire Club.
And I'm Carlo Vaquero with Net Wealth Finance.
And this week, we're going to be talking about supplementing retirement income with cash value life insurance or other life insurance products like annuities. Before we get into that, though, do you guys have any updates on your personal investments?
From my side, I'm liquidating a few of the rentals I have in planning. I don't know when this episode is in there, if I have some of the rental have already. So the main purpose is to be the bank. It's very in resonance of what we are talking here, the infinite banking concept, because my spread of each rental is few hundred dollars and I have to do all the repair and maintenance. What I try to do is so-called slow flip. I went to the summit and trying to learn how the system works, and I'm planning to buy my first couple of slow flips.
So what units are you getting rid of?
I'm thinking about one townhouse in Florida and another one in North Carolina.
And these were just long-term rentals that you've had and you've got some equity built up into them that you want to harvest?
Yes, mainly it's the 20 to 25% of the down payment plus a little bit equity the last couple of years accumulate, not much.
So you're planning on harvesting the cash and you're going to be putting your proceeds into your life insurance until you're ready to redeploy it into some slow flips. Is that correct?
Right.
Gotcha. Cool. Keep us updated on that as it goes along. And Carlo, do you have anything?
Nope, nothing this week. Still the charter season is underway, but no real updates on that.
All right. I am putting out on my YouTube channel, starting at some point this next week, we're going to be tracking $10,000 investment in QDTE. I've mentioned it earlier on this. I've since done a detailed video on my channel about it. And we're going to be borrowing from our life insurance policy at 5% interest. We're going to be putting it into QDTE using the tax advantage proceeds that kicks off as dividends to pay back the loan. And ultimately, hopefully within a short period of time, we'll pay back the loan and we'll still have the shares and we'll be able to do it again.
That sounds like a really interesting approach. What's the yield on QDTE right now?
The annual yield is somewhere in the mid 30%. And when you account for the dividends, it returns slightly higher than if you were just in the NASDAQ itself. But the dividends that it's kicking off are tax advantage. It's a return on capital. So you're not going to pay taxes as it kicks off. So it's a really good way to do this particular strategy. When we take a loan from our life insurance, we're outside of a tax advantage product at that point. So when we do an investment, if I were to put it in a different stock and that kicks off dividends or I sell covered calls against that, it's going to kick off income that I've got to pay taxes on. So this particular strategy I'm using with an after-tax brokerage account, we're using tax-advantaged loan money that we're going to put into that. And the money that's going to kick out is going to be tax advantage. We're not going to pay taxes on it. And so we'll be able to pay that loan back. Meanwhile, we're going to be left with shares that are essentially going to match the growth of NASDAQ, hopefully beat it by a little bit through the income that that ETF generates through selling call options. And the plan is basically I'm building an equivalent NDX position that's going to be growing tax advantage, but it kicks off money that pays off the loan. So I'll get more in depth on that with the video that I put out on my channel this next week. So watch for that if you're interested in following along. Moving on to today's topic, we're talking supplementing retirement income with cash value life insurance or annuities. Generally, when we talk about retirement, there's going to be a three-legged stool. This is a popular analogy. The legs of that stool get made up using Social Security, employee pensions, or personal savings. Now, the employee pensions, it's your expected income that's just going to refill all the time. And so that can often be met with an annuity or potentially cash value out of your life insurance. And the savings, it's not just savings in your bank, but it could be investments in your retirement accounts that you're going to be pulling out. So between those three things, you're going to be drawing all the income that you need in retirement. So the question before us today is, how do we supplement, or why would we supplement any of those efforts with life insurance products?
The reason why life insurance can be really good to supplement your other investments and other income streams is that tax advantage nature of life insurance. And so generally speaking, there's a couple of ways that you can access the capital. And when you have the ability to withdraw up to your tax basis, so on whole life, usually we might withdraw up to the premiums that we've paid in and not pay taxes on it. And then you might start taking loans on it. And that is a way that you can access really a lot of money tax-free to supplement your retirement income. And sort of similar to how you can reduce your taxable income and pay less in taxes overall when you're in retirement.
So essentially what we're going to be talking about today is potentially how we can use whole life, IUL, and different types of annuities in order to supplement our retirement efforts. And ultimately, people are going to have money to pull from pre-tax retirement accounts, after-tax retirement accounts, Social Security, which may or may not be taxed, and other savings. Those are basically the topics that I think we're going to end up hitting today. Carlo, you basically mentioned whole life, some of the ways that we might pull money out of that. Jing, you've got an IUL. How do you plan on using it, your IUL, in retirement?
It really depends on the funding scenario along the way. My plan is, in the early stage, I will divide my retirement into three stages, which I heard from a famous retirement guru. He's talking about you can really get up running, tour the world and see and do what you plan to do, didn't get a chance to do it. And then middle stage will be you a little tired, you want to enjoy that retirement life. And the last stage, which will be probably the later stage of your life.
So you're talking about the go-go, the slow-go, and the no-go stage of retirement. Now, you're a real estate investor as well, and I didn't mention that earlier. Real estate people have a little bit different view of retirement as well. So give us a little bit more detail on what you expect your approach might be utilizing your real estate and your IUL, potentially, I guess, any other retirement efforts you have saved. But I'm interested in hearing about that.
So by the time I plan my retirement, I hope I'll have somewhere 400 to 500 doors. And then those doors will bring the rental income to the household. I will evaluate how much I will continuously fund to my IUL. At that time of retirement, I'll have the rental income as cash. I'll probably hit the RMD, which we have to start withdrawal from the pre-tax accounts. We'll have the flexibility of taking loans from the Index Universal Life, the IUL, as we desire. So at that time, I'll have several different pockets of money I could take, and then I'll have to plan my retirement accordingly.
So are you planning on waiting to draw from your pre-tax retirement accounts until after age 72?
I think so. I don't think there's the necessity to start it earlier. We'll probably have to do when we hit the age 73.
Gotcha. And for you, are you anticipating drawing Social Security at the maximum age of 70 as well, or prior to that?
I think it will be later. I learned if you delay your retirement age, you get guaranteed 8%. That's a few years ago. I'm not sure if it's still 8% from the government, because I will have several stream of income coming to the household. I don't think I'll have to start at the retirement age. I'll probably delay that few years.
Yeah, so the current retirement age is 67 for most people. And for each year you delay, the Social Security amount goes up by 8%. So there is a big incentive to delay it. And this is one of the ways that we're going to structure utilizing our life insurance cash values or annuities in order to help meet the shortfall during actual retirement, when our our earned income is potentially reduced. And when we need to start drawing from Social Security, or when we want to start drawing from Social Security. So for a lot of people, you can use that time period in order to maximize the growth in your other retirement accounts that might be in the market, whether the market's up or down, and delay the drawing of Social Security to maximize that benefit. Those are good conversations that any of us could have with our financial advisor. Some insurance agents are really on the ball with this as well when it comes to retirement strategies and understanding how Social Security works, so that you can look up those figures and anticipate what you might want to do.
When I look at how I might start my retirement, I'm going to likely have a real estate portfolio as well. Hopefully that is covering my main expenses, my baseline expenses. Before I actually get to the point of drawing, my hope and desire is to strategically move pre-tax stuff. So whether that's different various methods of Roth conversions into Roth vehicles, so that I don't have to worry too much about RMDs. That's my hope. That is, you know, we'll see how that plays out. And then again, I think similarly, I would like to delay Social Security as much as possible and wait to draw from that. And I also intend to, James was earlier at the start of this podcast talking about tax-efficient dividends, but various types of tax-efficient dividends is part of my overall strategy as well. So whether that's qualified dividends or various types of strategies that are tax-efficient, so as to not pay too much taxes on those yields, that's part of the plan as well. And throughout that whole process, as James mentioned, supplementing where necessary, where it makes sense, using life insurance loans and or withdrawals if it's on the whole life side. But on the IUL side, I kind of prefer to do loans to start for the most part, have that opportunity for arbitrage with those indexed or participating loans. And that is kind of the overarching plan for how I think I will approach my retirement.
I'll say when it comes to whole life and IUL, there's basically ways that we expect to utilize cash value in those to supplement retirement income. With whole life, you generally want to do withdrawals first up to your basis, and then you're going to start the loans, because pretty much whole life, you don't anticipate getting arbitrage between the credit that a whole life company is going to give you and the dividend that it's paying out. You're not going to get an arbitrage in almost any policy. There might be in some years some small arbitrage, or we could end up in a low interest rate environment where we can maybe borrow from a bank at a lower rate than the dividend rate that creates some arbitrage inside the policy. But I think essentially we're probably going to do a withdrawal and then loans. And when it comes to IULs, we've got participating index loans that I expect would be used at the beginning part of retirement, where we have a really good opportunity for arbitrage. And later on in retirement, when the loan balances start to get high and the risk of not getting any credit that year, because your credit is going to be based on the index growth that you're using, we switch over to fixed loans where we get guaranteed offsetting credit for those loans. And we can stretch the cash value out in a much safer manner to help supplement our other retirement income needs.
Make that conversion to that offsetting credit, that wash loan. It sort of ends up being like, as you draw from that, you can kind of follow the 4% rule. And generally speaking, your growth on the funds that you haven't borrowed against yet might still continue to grow. And it's similar to what you might do with a Roth when you're converting to that wash loan.
So some people will reach out to us and ask, why don't I just keep my money in the market and do the 4% rule in the market? It's a tried and true strategy. What makes it better if we're doing loans from a life insurance policy? Why go to the expense of adding life insurance in order to supplement my investments in the stock market?
Well, I always tell my clients, life insurance, thinking about there's big umbrella on top of what you're doing. If your money is in the market, it's in the market. If the market tanks 40%, your money is losing 40% of the value. But for life insurance, if we put the money into this life insurance box, we always have that death benefit on top of what we try to do. In addition, since your money is not inside of the stock market, it's just referenced index value. So it's generally much safer. Remember, we also talk about the 0% floor.
The money in our life insurance is not correlated to the stock market. It's not going to go down when the stock market goes down. So we have a safe place to draw money from if the market's down. We don't have to sell everything that we've been accumulating in the stock market for the last 30, 40, 50 years. We don't have to sell it at half price if the market suddenly dips 50%. Like, we can dip into an asset that didn't drop and give the market a chance to recover. I think there's studies out there where life insurance, cash value in life insurance can be used as a volatility buffer. When the market drops, you don't keep withdrawing from the market unless you're having to take your RMDs, but you draw from your life insurance instead, and your overall portfolio has a much higher likelihood of success when you do that, as opposed to just trying to make it all the way through retirement despite the ups and downs of the market. Like most Monte Carlo situations, the odds of success, if you're just doing a 4% in the market over 30 years, it's not 100%. It can't be 100% because nobody knows what the market's going to do in the future. It can be a very high percentage probability of success, but what if we can make it even better? What if we can take it from 90% to 99%? By supplementing a safe place to store our cash that we can dip into if the market's very volatile.
And I would add that oftentimes, if we're talking about using the 4% rule, when the market does take a dive, if you're using pure investments, you should probably adjust to 4% of the lower value if you can. So instead of it even doing that or drawing that 4% at all when that market takes a nosedive, you can just supplement it with your life insurance. So you don't have an income hit when you're in retirement and the market takes a correction. And this is why life insurance is a great tool for that, but also why cash flowing assets like real estate or dividend portfolios can be helpful in those circumstances if they're continuing to pay a cash yield to supplement your income.
So I think all of you guys are on board with the idea of diversification. I don't think any of us are telling people you should be putting all of your money into whole life or all of your money into IULs or all of your money into annuities or all of your money into the stock market. Like, that's a recipe for disaster if anything goes wrong in retirement, if you're putting all of your eggs in one basket.
Yeah, I think just as a general rule, just because we do life insurance doesn't mean that that's the only tool for the job of retirement. A lot of these tools have a great place in a balanced asset portfolio for retirement, and we should really focus on having a different assets to meet different needs.
In the world of investing, people said diversification, diversification, diversification. It's the same as location, location, location in real estate. So diversify should be your top priority to put your eggs into several different buckets.
Yeah, what's funny is a lot of people that preach diversification have a narrow view of that. And their idea of diversification might be just diversify which stocks you're in. Or if you're a real estate investor, just diversify which real estate market you're in. Don't have all your real estate in one market, which is a good idea. It's a good suggestion. But why have everything in real estate or why have everything in the stock market when we don't have to? Things can actually be better. And it's a lot easier, human nature-wise, to ride out any particular volatility in one part of an investment strategy if our other parts haven't taken a hit all at the same time.
One other thing that life insurance can really serve a place in your retirement is if you want to have a big expenditure and you want to just borrow against your policy to fund something, a purchase that you might not otherwise do. So it can be something, as I look to plan my retirement, in all honesty, if I don't have to touch my life insurance, I won't. But if I need to, I will. And so that's kind of the way I look at this, is I won't touch any bucket unless I really need to. And the goal is to not really dig into principal as much as I can so that I can leave stuff for generations to come. But that doesn't mean I'm not going to live a comfortable life, because I fully intend to be very comfortable in my retirement.
Now, you two mentioned how you plan to start your retirement with your investments. And I didn't mention mine yet. So a brief picture of mine. We do expect to have some real estate. We have pre-tax retirement accounts, solo 401k. We've got Roth accounts. We've got IULs. And we've got whole life. We have everything under the sun. And we have some annuities. My expectation, when we get to retirement, we're probably at least 15 years out before we start to draw from any of these things. My expectation is I'm going to have a certain amount in annuities that will supplement Social Security for our guaranteed income that's going to be coming out. We're going to have a plan to transfer pre-tax brokerage account funds into Roth, where we may possibly have a lull in earned income, or we strategize some investment options that might offset earned income by large dollar amounts so we can do transfers from pre-tax to Roth. The Roth will probably be the very last thing that we try to touch. I love the Roth IRA in that when it passes on, if you die, you pass on to your beneficiaries and they get 10 more years of tax-free growth. I don't know of any other financial vehicle out there that will outlast you by 10 years with tax-advantaged or tax-free growth and tax-free withdrawals. Life insurance gets close. You can pass on a tax-free death benefit, and the person receiving that could put that into tax-free environment of life insurance where it can grow and it can continue to get passed on. But utilizing both of those is generally my preferred way to look at it.
You dug into something that I sort of mentioned as well, that strategically rolling into Roth and getting as much into a Roth, because I'm with you. When you pass away, 10 years of growth for our beneficiaries is a great thing. But consult with the tax professional for this. This is not tax advice, but the ways that people might do that is by getting assets that you can accelerate depreciation on is one way that you can generate a paper loss. So types of real estate, if you qualify as a real estate professional, or short-term rentals, those are examples of assets, or boats, if you run it as a business. Things that you can have accelerated depreciation on can be really good. And also, if you think about doing that at the time when you're starting to reduce your earned income so that you're not really having other income to offset, you have this ability to start doing this strategic transfer into these Roth accounts. This could be a very long discussion on those kinds of concepts, but it can be powerful. And my intention, my hope, is that I have very little pre-tax retirement accounts, and it's all in Roth if I can do it.
Someone with large amount of traditional retirement account, the RMB, if there's the 3-year continuous market tank, you really need to think about ahead of time. I know James mentioned Roth is a fantastic tool, which is also in my top priority to maximum fund Roth every single year. Also do the rollover year by year to gradually transfer those traditional IRA to Roth. Another thing I want to mention is when the agent is doing the illustration, sometimes we just illustrate and then tell you if you do the supplemental income at age 70, starting 70, you can withdraw X dollar every single year. That's just an illustration. It's just a way for you to think about it. You don't have to withdraw, say, 70,000 every year. That's why we have this kind of discussion to really give you some idea how you plan those 70 or 50,000, 65,000. It's just for the illustration purpose. You don't have to do it every single year like a salary. Sometimes I have people really get confused. They say you have to do it every single year at the same amount, which is completely not true.
Good points. Before we wrap this up, let's leave the listener with some warnings. What to watch out for when it comes to retirement? What don't you want to do? Or what are you guys hearing out there, either things that people are saying that might not be true, or you might just have a different opinion on, or any potential horror stories that you've heard?
I tend to call out Dave Ramsey a bit on the, you can expect 12% returns in the market and draw 8. I think that things like that are dangerous. A lot of people have done a lot of studies on stuff, and that 3-4% rule is pretty good as a general thing. So supplementing with life insurance can be part of that whole picture, and the possibility of arbitrage can make a big difference with all of that. So I just do like to call that out, though. We don't want to just focus in on very high or expecting very high returns in some of these assets.
I shudder to think about the people that take Dave's advice and start taking out 8% and expect that portfolio to last throughout an entire retirement. The worst thing that can happen is a failure with those funds.
I heard from some guru talking about how bad traditional IRA or any pre-tax retirement accounts. You don't want to pass that down to your next generation. Because of the 10-year rule and all the money is pre-tax, your adult kids have to exhaust and withdraw those money in 10 years. And because those are pre-tax, they have to pay the income tax every single year, which can be disastrous.
So good planning can help avoid massive tax hits on future generations, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly.
So I have a horror story to share. My wife's grandparents got talked into putting all of their retirement money into a variable annuity. There was no diversification here. They sold a restaurant, they had a bunch of money, and they got talked into putting it into a variable annuity, and I'm sure the illustration looked great, and they thought everything was going to be good. Unfortunately, the year was 2006. A couple of years later, we all know what happened, the Great Recession, and they lost way too much of the money that they had in there, because in a variable product, even a life insurance product, your money is at risk in the stock market. And when the stock market crashes, you lose your money. There's no good reason that I can think of that they should have put all of that money into one variable annuity. I'm not a big fan of variable annuities to begin with, but no diversification was a disaster. They ended up filing for bankruptcy. They ran out of money fairly quickly after that, had to downsize their house. It was a nightmare. So be careful. If you have anybody out there that's advocating that you put all of your money into one particular financial product, be very skeptical of the reasons that they want you in that product. Get some other advice. You will probably be thankful that you did. And with that, it's time for this week's call to action.
Really have to plan and then set aside some time to learn all different accounts we were talking about here. I think someone mentioned people spend so much money planning on their annual vacation instead of putting some time to really study about Social Security, about different assets they could build up along the way, and then how they want to distribute their wealth down the road as well. So I really encourage everyone to plan and educate and study and then have that roadmap for your retirement. You will be glad you did.
I think there's a lot of great content studying the various assets that you might have access to in your retirement is something you should plan for. If you want to speak with a professional, then that can also be helpful. But all of these different assets could be entire videos and courses in themselves. So there's a lot of content out there, and YouTube can be a great place to start. I have some videos on this. I think James has videos on this. There's a lot of great content out there that you can learn about some of these assets.
And I think most financial advisors out there come from the field of finance that involves mostly investments in or around the stock market. Most of them do not properly understand how life insurance can fit in with a good retirement strategy, especially when it's a special designed high cash value product like we advocate for on this podcast. So make sure that as part of your due diligence, when you're talking to financial advisors, talk to a good insurance agent that understands specially designed high cash value products and or annuities and how they might be able to help supplement. It doesn't mean you have to purchase one, but at least learn about it so that you can weigh the pros and the cons along with what your other advisors are telling you. There's almost never too much information that you can get around these things. Although sometimes too much information leads to inaction. We don't want that. But definitely get some more information on this stuff and make sure you're reaching out to people who understand the products. Next week, we will be bringing you how to use your infinite banking policy and practicing infinite banking. We're going to get in depth on that. So be sure to come back next week. With that, I'm James Barber, your Oregon Cash Flow Pro. I'm licensed in almost every state for life insurance and annuities. I would love to meet with you guys if you have any interest in any of those products or you just want a discussion on finances. I'm pretty well-rounded in most strategies out there.
This is Jane with Tech Exempt Millionaire Club. You can find me here. It's a school community. I'm licensed life insurance agent as well. Happy to help as much as I can.
And I'm Carlo Vaquera. You can find me at netwellfinance.com or on YouTube at netwellfinance.
Appreciate you guys joining us this week. Take care. We'll see you next time.
See you next time.
Thanks for watching.